Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are getting our Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. I'm putting together my Costas birthday show and my Pizza John's thing. I went away on like sort of a weird surprise trip to Albuquerque with my wife, and I've been on the road doing bucket list stuff, and the Ravens keep losing, but I do have Raven scratch-offs. And you can be a winner. The Maryland Lottery gives me these for our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Our friends at Curio Well this put me out on the tastiness tour. We've been eating good things. And every time I'm in St. Louis, I wind up at like Pappy's Barbecue, and I wind up getting Ted Drew's frozen custard, which I recommend in the Lambert Airport. If you're stopping in St. Louis, look for the yellow thing, put your credit card in. Even if it's 8 in the morning, eat frozen custard at 8 in the morning because you're in St. Louis and you should. This guy gave me one of the great gastronomic gifts, but he's now in Phoenix. And I was in Phoenix a couple weeks ago and I didn't bother him and I didn't think of him because some people think of you as a Philadelphian, Howard Balzer, a longtime pro football insider, Hall of Fame voter, historian. Uncle Howard to me, and if you follow him on the Sirius XM radio, you know the great work of Howard Balzer. And every time I'm in an antique shop or an old joint that has a football digest, I'm always looking through those in the baseball for you and Barry Bloom and all you old schoolers who must have been really young guys when you were writing in those publications when I was a kid, Hal.
Barry Bloom also lives in Phoenix. I don't know if you
I
were
know.
aware of that. And so, yeah, I mean, you look back at some of those things from the day. And of course, I did a lot of that when I moved out here 5 years ago. Hard to believe it's been 5 years, but going through things in my basement and deciding what to keep and what not to, and the things that I came across, oh my goodness, I remember that. I remember that. So, yeah, the years fly by. And who know, I couldn't even guess how many years ago it was when you came to St. Louis. We did some radio and you were doing some things there. But I'll say this quickly before we get into all the subjects we want to discuss. It was about, I don't remember, 7, 8 years ago that I'm in Canton for the Hall of Fame weekend and doing a radio show for Sirius, and we're interviewing Warren Sapp. And I said to him, I said, and I always look at it when we're interviewing a guy, when do they go into the hall and all those little different nuggets. I said, can you believe it's been 7 years since you were enshrined? Time really flies, doesn't it? And so Warren Sapp folds his arms, sits back and says, well, I always say that days drag, years fly, and decades zoom. And we laughed about it. But then, as you sit back and think of it, you go, boy, is that true?
Well, it's been a decade since I sat in your studio in St. Louis with my wife, and we did our swabbing
Yeah.
at Busch Stadium in St. Louis. And
Yeah, I figured it probably was a decade. And so, yeah, the decades definitely zoom. And just happy to be still, happy to be, doing what I'm doing in my eighth decade of life. What can you say?
For the Ravens and for being a sports fan, first off, I'm in Baltimore where the baseball team began the season with hope. And I know what a sports fan you are, like around the clock, you're a sports fan, not just a football insider. But the hope here was we had a baseball and a football team. They're both good at the same time, and they were coming up. The baseball team has gone to hell in a handbasket, and it was unthinkable 6 weeks ago, and I didn't reach to you, but I had the rest of the mafia on. I reached to my Peter Kings and my Clark Judges, and I had John McClain. I had a whole bunch of you voters on, and everybody's like, hey, great, you have 14 wins, 13 wins, 15 wins. This is the year. This is the year. This is the year. Mahomes is down. The Chiefs are down. This is the year. They're 1-5 at the bye, Howard, and it is just. I don't know. You're watching it from the outside. On the inside here, it's really spooky weird because it's a weird, rudderless time that the Ravens aren't accustomed to, and the fan base here has been so spoiled that we're talking about where our playoff path is going to be in June and July and August, not how we're going to get to the playoffs.
And Nestor, it shows, especially in the NFL, more so than any other sport, because there's so few games. It shows how fragile things can be when you're expecting excellent things and there's no reason to think otherwise. And then all of a sudden, you're looking up and like you said, 1-5, and knowing that it, just to even get back to 500, if you're if the Ravens were to go on a winning streak, it would take a month just to get back to 1-5, to 500. And so, but the fragility of it is with close games, there's always so many close games. Of course, the Ravens are in a thing now where they're not even playing close games. Early in the season, Derrick Henry is having fumbling issues, and that's leading to close losses. And now, without Lamar Jackson and a defense that is very troubled, they can't score. I mean, heck, one field goal against the Rams at home. I mean, that's like you said, it's kind of unthinkable, just as it is this. As I'll, I know you're the one asking the questions, but I'll ask you this question. If someone had told you before the season started that after week six, the teams with the best record in each conference would be the Buccaneers in the NFC and the Colts in the AFC, what would you have said then? Probably you're out of your mind.
And I'm still not sure they're Super Bowl contenders, either one of
Oh,
them, right?
not
Because
yet.
we.
There's a bunch of teams right now. I'm counting it up. There's 10 teams in the league, five in each conference, that are 4-2. So they're only one game behind. And the Steelers, having had the bye already, are 4-1. So you're right. You never know what's going to happen the rest of the way. But it just shows what the NFL is. And it's a reason why every year they have at least five and sometimes more teams that are in the playoffs that weren't in the playoffs the season before. It's just as you can always predict that that's the case. Sometimes you can't predict the teams that it'll be, but you know it's going to happen.
Howard Balzer is my guest. He is in Phoenix, Arizona, where his he's done the whole Manifest Destiny thing. It's like an Eagles song, you know, from Philly to St. Louis to Phoenix. You know, all you need to do is make it to Lahaina, and you will have made the whole Eagles song happen from Hotel California. I would say this: feelings are really bruised here. And in Cincinnati, and in some places where it's really kind of gone off the rails early and bad with quarterbacks. And, you know, when your franchise quarterback goes, you go, right? We learned that with Cooper Rush here this week. And then all of a sudden, Tyler Huntley's the one giving us a chance to win. I would say for Detroit, for Kansas City, for Buffalo, there's been some humbling there, not only in the Las Vegas community in regard to like what are they in regard to can they win this week or not, but just in regard to maybe 11-6 is going to look a little bit more the way this is going to be than 15-2 for a lot of these teams because it doesn't feel like there's any powerhouse. I mean, I'll throw the Eagles in there too.
Right.
So, you know, the teams that really thought that we looked at and said that could be a 14 or 15, that can be an elite team. That and the Ravens being one of them. They're not, you know, they're not going to be 12-5. I promise you that at 1-5. So I look at it and say, you know, readjust where all of it's going to be and readjust where you are in December. And look, I wrote a Dear John Harbaugh letter that I'll send you that you clearly haven't read because you probably want to talk to me about it if you had this week about accountability for these guys running out the back door. And you're an old school reporter. I mean, Mark Andrews running off the podium after dropping the ball in Buffalo out the back door, you know, no speaky. And the Ravens have had a lot of that going on, a lot of accountability things. The Justin Tucker thing here that just evaporated, and he's going to be kicking for somebody in 6 weeks in the playoffs, I would think, as well. Not here, but. And the scandal that really wasn't, because this is a small town and nobody talks here, Howard, as you can imagine. And I just think for them at this point, I've said all along, and Harbaugh wrote me a note 2 weeks ago telling me he thinks that I hate him. I said, dude, I picked you to win the Super Bowl, A. B, I'm going to sit here right now. Today's my birthday, by the way, Hal. I'm going to say that on Christmas Day, they'll be 7-7. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're going to figure out a way to win because they're the Ravens and they always do. I'm wondering on the outside, you probably say the same thing. All of you who cover the league would look at this and say, well, they get Lamar back, Roquan this, and Marlon that, and Ronnie Stanley this, and they got Derrick Henry, and they got smart coaches, and they can X them and O them, and Jimmy and Joe them. Dude, they're getting killed on the offensive and defensive lines. Like, I've never seen anything like it because Madubuike going down, Stanley not being, and we've all had questions about him. It's really affected Linderbaum that the guards are no good, and it's affected everything that they haven't been able to run the ball.
It's a great observation, and most of the time when you look at a team that struggles, and the fingers always point. I mean, there's kind of almost this everywhere in the NFL when things are struggling on offense. It's funny because I have a term, Nestor, that I call it collective amnesia. And before the season, everyone's saying, well, the line, the offensive line's looking pretty good, and the key is the line, and the games are won in the trenches. And the Eagles were a classic example of that in the Super Bowl against Kansas City. And then, especially on offense, when things start to go bad, most of the time it's because of the offensive line. There's other issues, obviously, but a lot of times it's the offensive line. But no one says that. It's the offensive coordinator, it's the play calling, it's this and that. But if you don't, if you're an off a game plan guy and you're putting in a plan for the week and you have questions about what your offensive line is capable of, then that affects what you do in the game plan because you're trying to devise something that will give you the best chance to win. And when you look at the Bucs, you look at the Colts, I talked about them earlier, two really good offensive lines. The Eagles, they've had some trouble on the offensive line with some guys getting injured. And all of a sudden, Saquon Barkley, who was all world last year, is average at best this season running the football. So those are the keys. And winning in the trenches will always be what's important. And yet that's forgotten when a lot of the analysis gets out there during the season to see why a team is doing what it's doing. And again, I'll go back to those two teams now with the best records. Look at the resurrections, if you will, that they have at quarterback with Baker Mayfield and Daniel Jones, guys that the outside noise and even teams would say, oh, it's
Hey,
time to
throw
move on.
Sam Darnold in there too, who was kicked around and on another team, right? Like these guys that smelled so good in Indianapolis and smelled so good on draft day to most of these franchises. There's a lot of guys that flame out. I mean, the Jamarcus Russell, the road is long with the Todd, Marinoviches, and you've been at this a long time. But then there's the resurrection cases for not even just a Geno Smith or, a Trent Dilfer to win later on in his career or whatever. But these guys that were lottery picks, were franchise quarterbacks that died because they went to the Jets or went some awful place and Cleveland. My God, I mean, Baker Mayfield, right? Like, what could eat you up quicker than Cleveland, right? So I don't know that we should be shocked by this, given what all the experts thought these guys could do in being able to throw the football through a peanut.
No, I'm not shocked. And I've always been a proponent of the term, it's all 11. I mean, there's a certain mindset among many that says when the offense is struggling or the defense, they say, well, the defense isn't good or the offense isn't good, whatever it might be. When actually on the plays that even on the plays that fail, when all this and key situations, whether it's third down, whether it's red zone, whether it's fourth quarter, whatever it might be, it's not like all 11 guys are doing the wrong thing on a play. All it takes is one. All it takes is one to either get beat by a better guy or to miss his assignment or be just not lined up perfectly the way you should be. And all of a sudden, you don't win the play and you have enough of those. And you're going to lose the game, but it's never like one guy that's making all the one guy's making all the bad plays. It's a combination. So it comes down to all 11. That's why football is the ultimate team sport. With every player that's on the field at one time, there's an individual assignment that each of them have. And it's why the old cliche, which is boring, that Bill Belichick and the Patriots always used to say, do your job. And when you have a team where most of the guys do your job, then you've got a chance. But if there's plays when this guy doesn't or that guy doesn't, something's going to go wrong somewhere most of the time. And in a league where there's so many close games, in the first 6 weeks, Nestor, 93 games, I believe it's been that have been played, 53 have been decided by one score or less, and 28 of them have been decided by a field goal or less. And look at all the games that are decided right at the end of the game, like the game you alluded to earlier with the Bears winning on Monday night. I mean, the Cardinals had a streak. They were 2-0, and they lost. This was unbelievable. It's the first time it ever happened in NFL history. They lost three games in a row on field goals as time expired in the game. And of course, the reaction of the fan base is the team sucks, they're horrible, they got to start over again, and all these things when they're losing by, four games by a total of 9 points. And all of a sudden, everybody says everything is bad. And that's the perception many times that's out there when the reality is much, much different.
Which is why I think the Justin Tucker story is going to come back to roost in soon, because he will be the best kicker available soon, and so that story will happen, and that just speaks to how important the kicking is. I had Marvin Lewis on the other day, who's also out in Scottsdale with you, smart guys, especially as the weather changes here. No place to be if your football team sucks. Just go to Phoenix for a little while in this time of year. But I was talking about the kicking game and how much it's changed, and how I think the coaches are trying to figure it out, the kickers are trying to figure it out, guys with big legs trying to figure out that that doesn't, they've marginalized that on behalf of safety, and I'll hear all that, but it's really kind of changed the game.
Well, it totally has. And the new rule with the K ball, the kicking balls that they use, where now they give the team all the. I mean, I can remember, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, whatever it is, it's probably longer ago than I remember, when they made it illegal. You couldn't touch the balls at all before the game. Then they went back to being, you were allowed to do it. Then this year, but it only was during the week of the game. I mean, now they give each team a whole bunch of balls before the season starts. And they can pick and pick the ones they want to use each week, and it's definitely added to the distance. But the main thing, though, is the accuracy. I mean, you still have to be accurate. It was like, Nestor, it was like during the whole steroids era when everyone said, "Oh, the ball's going further and all that." And yeah, it probably was, but you still had to hit the ball in the sweet spot of the bat for it to for it to even have a chance to get out. And that's the thing with these kickers: the number of kicks that are right down the middle. So the accuracy is there. The distance is obviously there. There's ha hardly any hesitation anymore to put guys out there for 55-yard field goals and even 60-yard field goals, depending on the situation. And so, yes, that's changed it. And the rules have changed it also with the whole kickoff deal, where now most of the time teams are starting their possessions at the 35-yard line. Or better. Sometimes it's within, shorter than that, but a
Well,
lot of
especially when the
times.
kicker's screwing up in any way. If kicker screws up too long, too short, too east, too west,
So think of it this way. So you're at the 35-yard line, and if you have to get to the 40 just for a 58-yard field goal, well, what's that? That's 25 yards.
two
That's
first
all.
downs, yeah.
Yeah, that's all you need is to get into field goal range. And so all of that has changed the game, and it's led to a lot of what we're seeing here in the first 6 weeks of the season.
Howard Balzer is here. He is a Pro Football Insider. You can read his work and listen to him out on SiriusXM. He's kind of everywhere, and cover as much Cardinals and you're out in that part of the world. But from the Ravens' perspective in this division, where Pittsburgh is and trying to turn it around, I mean, you were in Philly, I think, during the Randall Cunningham era. I think of these eras, the Jim Kelly era, the Dan Marino eras, where these great quarterbacks, Philip Rivers being a guy I think of more in modern terms, after, Roethlisberger got his, Brees got his, Eli, they all won one, and even though Tom Brady had a handful of them. But for great quarterbacks and for where Lamar is and Josh Allen, I'll throw all the guys who haven't won that are still at this. But it feels like this is slipping away a little bit in Baltimore. And that's the weirdest part of this, is because the Ravens have had this excellence that's gone on for a period of time, that when I put on the television and see Arizona or Jacksonville or other places where it's really been challenged, even Denver after the Manning era, just places where things have gotten sour, it's never gotten sour here. And it's
Right.
gotten a little sour. And here, Howard, this is not just my Baltimore soul, but this goes back to my dented childhood and seeing Marty Domras trying to beat Joe Namath in 1973 as a kid, and wondering why everybody hated the Colts because of Johnny U. And my dad was pissed and all that. Then Burt Jones came, and we had the 75 Colts. We had a reunion here for them a couple weeks ago. And then the stadium emptied out all over again as a kid, when the Ursay era. And I compared the last 2 weeks, and this is a very unkind reference, And especially now that gambling's legal, this name will come to you. I said it reminded me of the Art Schleister era here in Baltimore, where this, and I was a 13, 14-year-old kid going out for game. I remember seeing Jim Hart play, and I remember seeing Chris Collins. Where every time I see Collins, whether it's, I remember seeing you in those zebra uniforms out there running around with the Bengals when you finally went from the logos to the thing, right? And 81, 82, that period of time, Memorial Stadium was empty. All the blue seats, the gold, it looked like an April baseball game to be at a Colts game at that time. And to see, I've never, Howard, other than COVID, I've never seen our stadium empty. I remember going and bitching after the knee and the Wembley knee and everything that happened here in the end of the Flacco era, where the stadium would be emptier than I wanted it to be, and it was a little embarrassing. But I mean, empty, empty, empty. People booing, people yelling about Harbaugh. If I took calls this week, they'd all be fire Zach or fire. I don't do that here. I'm realistic. I think. John's the adopted son of Steve Bisciotti. Steve Bisciotti's not firing John Harbaugh. And I don't think John Harbaugh's firing Zach Orr. And I don't think he's installing Chuck Pagano or any of that. But if you're doing sports radio here this week and we're taking phone calls, you and me, Howard, in a 1-in-5 thing after everything that's happened here and players are running out the back door and everybody's discontented and the stadium was empty and empty, Art Schleister empty, I've just never seen, I don't say morale lower, but John's losing. John lost me a long time ago, as did Chad Steele when they lost my press pass somehow along the way in my 30th year of covering the team. And they've been really unprofessional in a lot of things they've done. The Justin Tucker thing didn't go well. The Wembley knee thing didn't go well. I would just say, man, they better be careful. You know, they've added a lot of premium this and premium that. And the only thing Tom Brady wanted to talk about in a broadcast on Sunday was premium plays and how to get into them and how to kick Zach Orr's ass with them. And he got into a lot of premium plays. And I'm worried here. I sit here and I'm worried about it on the inside because the fans have never seen it be bad here. It's weird.
Yeah, it really is. I'll get back to it in a second because I just want to refer to something you said back at the beginning of that, saying that I was in Philly during the Randall Cunningham era, which I was not. I was actually in Philly during the Roman Gabriel era, and it goes back so far that I remember when the Eagles acquired a quarterback named King Hill in a trade where they traded Norm Snead, and I thought it was the coolest thing to get a guy on the team named King because my father's name was King. So that's just a little personal stuff there in terms of that, but that's how far back all that goes. But in terms of where you are now, yeah, that goes back to that word I used earlier. No one ever realizes how fragile things can be. And I do recall, I don't remember which season it was in the last five, eight, whenever it was, where the Ravens didn't make the playoffs and they ended up having a very, very disappointing record. But there was still the confidence that they knew what they were doing and Ozzie Newsome was running things and you knew they'd bounce back and they certainly did. So I think that's still probably the reality of what will happen here because despite some of the other things you're talking about, it's still, I think, a football savvy organization in terms of the things that they do, whether it's enough to, to get it going this year or not, who knows? There are cases where teams have come back from bad starts, but I think in the long run they'll probably be all right. But again, you never know. You never know what's going to lead to, a few years of, disappointment. I mean, heck, look at the Patriots with Mike Vrabel as the head coach, and he had things going in Tennessee, had a couple of tough seasons, mainly because of the players that he was given. And they fired him, hired Brian Callahan as the head coach. Now he's fired 6 weeks into the season. And guess who the Titans are playing this week? Mike Vrabel and the Patriots, the coach that they ridiculously fired a couple of years ago. But that's what we see happen. And all you have to do as a owner or whoever, when making the decisions about these coaches, do we really think we're going to find somebody better than John Harbaugh, much less as good as the head coach? I mean, you might, but there's never a guarantee. And these teams that go one and done or two and done or don't even make it through their second season, to me, is just the definition of insanity. And so That's where we are, and that happens in the NFL every year with coaches that are fired when they haven't been there that long, and then they get into that routine of, oh, another 2 years, let's change it again and change change what we're doing on offense or defense, which means the players getting accustomed to new systems, and it's very difficult to get consistency when that's the way an organization is being run.
Well, I would even say this, and this is where I'm going to ask you to be an old guy, and I'll be older than you for, we'll just play that on the radio. And let me get cranky for a minute. You're in Phoenix, Arizona now, not because you wanted to be, or it was your life's mission to go there. You were covering a football team in St. Louis, that literally a guy from Missouri took out of the state of Missouri. This would be Bisciotti moving the team to Bimini, because that's where he is. Like it's an amazing thing, because all of this we're dancing around. It's like people that dance around Trump, screwing up America. You're dancing around these billionaires who are nuts. And in many, 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 many cases, they're nuts. In whatever way that made them billionaires, that made them nuts. I'm dealing with this here with the baseball owner. We had a baseball owner come here, Howard, after 30 years at Angelos. I'm praying that we get something better, because my last name's Aparicio, and as much as we talk football, baseball been very, very good to me and my family. And so I'm a baseball first guy. My last name's Aparicio. It's why I built a radio station before the Ravens existed, and had a career here, never thinking when I lost the Baltimore Colts that there would ever be a Baltimore Ravens, right? But you were covering the St. Louis Rams when they thought there would never not be a St. Louis Cardinals, and now you're in Arizona, where this is the thing that used to be the thing that was in a place that you used to be. And at heart, I was a Aller fan anyway. This was my team, and they're long gone and forgotten about when they put their jerseys on, and I buy the Derrick Henry jersey and I have John McClain or Pastorini or whatever. But the bottom line is, the business part of this and the amount of money would be inconceivable to Pete Rozelle, or to even Art Modell, or even David Modell, to say how much money is flowing around. That if the Ravens want to fire John Harbaugh, that's a $60 million proposition, the same way it was a $60 million proposition for the state of Pennsylvania and students in State College to get rid of James Franklin over the weekend. There's just so much money here, and the lack of accountability from the old guy way of the way you and I used to cover owners, and John Stedman would sit at the pool with Joe Namath at Super Bowl III, and that's the way they communicated. The communication now is money, money, more money, sponsorship, media money, pay us for access. We have our own Hard Knocks channel, that in our own team website, that everything's going to be sanitized. And I would just say, for the modern part of this, kind of what you see is what you get in regard to crazy decisions being made and franchises that, quite frankly, can't get out of their own way. I mean, take the Browns as an example. I remember how angry Bisciotti was when they gave Deshaun Watson all of that money. They can't even get along with each other about all of this in the salary cap era, and cheating, and who's doing what. Did the coach walk into the tent and let's suspend them and take draft picks? All the nonsense that goes on behind all this. But this is 32 Vince McMahons, for better or worse. And I got Belson's book over here, and I always tell Leibovich that Big Game book was the best book ever written on the NFL, because the circus part of the ownership and how all of this sort of works, once you've been in on it, it really is something to behold how successful this league has become. So successful that there really isn't a whole lot of accountability, even for Daniel Snyder.
No, it's a great point. And I'll say this about the books going way back. I don't know if you ever read the book The League, which was a tremendous book. And I believe it was published around the 80s. And my memory is a very long book. And I remember reading most of it on a flight home to St. Louis from Hawaii at a league meeting, because there was nothing else to do for all those hours. But yeah, you're right. You used the two words, more money. And no matter what they're making, there's always that push and that to make more and to get more and bring in, whether it's TV, whatever it might be. And that is the name of the game. And you have owners like, you talk about accountability,
Is that the
Jerry
David Harris book, by the way?
David Harris. Yeah.
Because my dude John Eisenberg wrote a book, The League, How Five Rivals Created. So I,
Awesome.
you know, so I, you know what? I John's down in Texas. I tried to get him on this week. And John's a God, John's family to me. He's like, he is my uncle. But the rise of the Clown NFL, David Harris, because I love this because with the baseball stuff going on, I keep telling people, go read Lords of the Realm. Just go read Lords of the Realm and you'll understand baseball. Football had such a book in the 80s, and I never knew that. So this is why you're a gift to me, Balzer, you know?
Exactly.
$4.19. I can buy this book right now. Professional football is more than America's game. It's America's obsession. There it is, right there, man. Violent spectacle staged by the NFL each year. 40 years old. Wow.
Pretty impressive. And then, of course, you can go back to the great book by Pete Gent, North Dallas 40, with the famous line that was also in the movie. You know, every time that I say it's a business, you say it's a game, but then every time I say it's a game, you say it's a business. And so that's kind of the essence of it all. And so it's all about the dollar and doing this and putting in. I mean, heck, in the Cardinals stadium, they made a big deal of putting in, they call them casitas that they have in the end zone and different things. And then they did something on the sidelines low, that the cheerleaders hardly can be on the field because it blocks the view of the people that are paying all that money to sit that close to the field and basically have no good view of what's going on the field, but they don't care. I mean, they don't care. And that's
Anybody who wants to watch a football game on the field doesn't like football because you
no.
can't see the game there.
Exactly. So yes, but that's sport, and that's big business. And that's what it is. And then you have an owner like Jerry Jones who can flip the bird to the fans and get fined, ooh, $250,000.
And then
I mean,
deny that he did it, and then to say I didn't mean to do it.
I didn't mean to do it, but 250 grand, which is the cost for the season of a practice squad player. Wow, that's really going to hurt Jerry Jones and say, boy, I better not do that
You know
again.
what Jerry would do is he would go like Johnny Cash and give him the other one.
But
Well,
we probably did.
he is his own. When you talk about the circus, right? I mean, there have been books written about Jerry, and there'd be more written about him. I've met him. He's been magnanimous with me on many occasions. The Big Game book, there was a lot of great Jerry stuff about his bust and all of that. But it does speak to what the league has become when they're waking up in Brazil and I'm waking up in Munich and we're going to Madrid and we're going to Dublin and it's actually work. That's the thing that's amazing is when I've been in Europe, it's not fake. I've been on those trains going through London, going to games and seeing 32 jerseys, 35 or 36 if you count the Oilers and a couple teams that are defunct.
And the thing about overseas is they've hit on the right formula, but they still throw out that little carrot. Oh, yeah, we can envision a team over there and all that. Well, they have the perfect formula because they just send over a couple of teams and the fan, and fans here will travel, but local people will go because it's an event when they have that game. But if there was a team there and that team was in a 3-14 season or 4-13, whatever it is, how many people would be going then? And how many players are going to want to go there? So I don't, who knows? I'll never say it'll never happen, but the way they're doing, the real thing is they're talking about, every team will play an international game every year and there'll be 16 of them. And that's what they're pushing towards because they can make each individual game a separate event. Having a team is a whole different, story. And so, I mean, hey, I'll give you
Jacksonville is still figuring that out, right? Literally.
A perfect example. And this happened to other teams, obviously, but the Cardinals had their punter wake up last Thursday with an issue with his back. So the Cardinals quickly got a punter in, three of them actually, for tryouts, and then signed one of them, Pat O'Donnell, who had to kick in Sunday's game against the Colts. Well, imagine you were in London playing a game and that happened to your kicker, right? And all these teams bring in. A lot of people don't pay attention to it. I get it. But, today, Tuesday, is tryout day in the NFL. And there'll be 80, 100 guys getting tryouts with teams, whether it's for the future, whether it's for a practice squad spot because someone got hurt and all those things. Well, imagine on a Thursday or a Friday. But can you imagine a team in London bringing in all these guys for a tryout? Seriously? Is that going to be realistic? But suppose it happens later in the week and you've got to find a kicker or a punter fast. Oh, boy. Hey. Hey, you want to come to London and try out? Well, I'm not so sure about that. So those are the little intricacies that will probably, it will make it very difficult to work. But that's it's like you said, it's all about the money with these events, and they know that they're always going to get those big crowds there wherever they play, whether it's Wembley. Where did they say that they already announced they're playing a game in Australia next season?
I want
So.
to
That's where the yeah, I'd like to go too.
go.
That's where all this is headed.
Howard Balzer is here. He covers the National Football League. He used to cover this team. This is the LA Rams. This is 71. This is more like Fred Dreyer, Deacon Jones sort of Rams, not quite the white helmets.
Anyway.
They are, as we speak, Howard, it's my birthday today. It's my birthday. But as we speak, they've relined Camden Yards, the baseball stadium. And Matthew Stafford, after kicking the Ravens' ass, is hanging out here eating crab cakes all week, and they're practicing here. So the LA Rams, moved by Stan Kroenke, that have greatly affected your life and moved you to Chandler, Arizona, they play in LA, and they built a billion-dollar stadium in LA that I went through about 2 weeks ago out there. And they played a game here, and they're practicing in our billion-dollar baseball stadium where the Jim Henneman press box has been displaced to left field. And they're practicing some football, some American football, and they're getting on a plane and they're flying out of BWI over to London to play this weekend, which is nine time zones away, right? Am I doing the math right, I think here. We're in the middle of it. It's like being boiled in the middle of the like the lobster being in the water. It just warm you like you're in the middle of it, and Rams fans don't care. And the Jaguars thing, I bring that up. Jacksonville probably never should have had a franchise. If you're going to play a couple of your games over in London and rent the team out, it's like the Devil Rays thinking they were going to rent half their team to the Expos or something like that. Oh, yeah, let's share our team. You know what I mean? Buffalo could have been doing that with Toronto all along, right? We're in a weird spot here where. I think the Raiders have become this team. They don't really belong to Vegas. They belong to anybody that wants them to have them for a while, you know?
And what's interesting, and you mentioned the with Jacksonville, and of course Jacksonville got the team when there would never have been a Rams in St. Louis had St. Louis got the expansion team for 1995, and the two teams, and I know Baltimore was right in the running for it then also, and instead the league picked Charlotte for the Panthers and then Jacksonville for the Jaguars. But they put off the league meeting where they were going to pick two teams. They only picked one, and that was the Panthers.
Well, that's when we thought we were going to be the other team, too.
The thing was, it was truly going to be St. Louis because they had issues with ownership. And the league said, you've got to get your ownership situation clarified for the next meeting that we're going to have in a month. And here's the funny thing that a lot of people don't remember, Nestor. Riding in on his white horse that everyone thought was going to save the day for St. Louis was Stan Kroenke. He was going to be the owner of the expansion team, right? And so, but there was a little glitch. There was a beer distributor in St. Louis named Jerry Clinton, who was part of the effort that got the dome built for an expansion team. And he didn't have the money, but he was going to be a part owner of the team. He didn't have the big money, but what he did was he struck this deal with the Dome that for 2 years he would own the le he would own the lease. He would own the rights to be to be who plays games there. Well, Stan Kroenke didn't want to deal with some beer distributor, right? He does things on his own. I mean, there's a philanthropist in St. Louis named Michael Steinberg, who he was a partner with at one time, who left him because he just got tired of what Stan Kroenke did. Well, anyway, make a long story short, they go to Chicago for this league meeting. Everyone's wondering what's going to happen. What is St. Louis going to propose here? And they figured it was a done deal. Well, Kroenke wouldn't work with Jerry Clinton, and so what they proposed at the league meeting was that we will play in Busch Stadium for 2 years. Two seasons until Clinton's ownership of the lease expired, and then we'll move into the dome. Well, the guy at the time, who was the liaison in the league with the teams that were vying for expansion, guess who? Roger Goodell. He was the guy dealing with all these teams. He had gotten to know Jerry Clinton. He saw all the things that St. Louis had done and he had done to get the dome built. And he said to the owners, that's not right. That's not right to push Jerry Clinton out. And so they voted for Jacksonville as the team to
Because
go
St.
there.
Louis didn't have its act together.
The ownership didn't. But here's the funny thing with Goodell. Then he became part of the lie 20 years later when Kroenke was angling to go to Los Angeles and be the savior to bring football back to that area. And all of a sudden, Goodell loved him, knowing what he had done and been against it 20 years before, but was all in on the Rams being there. And he was part of the lie of that was told to St. Louis all along in terms of what was going on with the land out in Hollywood Park and where they built the stadium at, in Inglewood. So anyway, those are some of those little intricacies that go on behind closed doors that most people don't know about. And that's why Kroenke wanted to go. But they said, hey, we're still going to work with St. Louis. I mean, well, I'm going to do my damnedest to keep this team here. Well, no, he led the charge out, obviously, and he wanted to be the savior. And that was the thing that got that done because of his personal money. And, LA, how many different opportunities did they have? People forget when, the league had an uneven number of teams for a while, right? And the league voted a team for Los Angeles 1 year at a league meeting in May. It was around 99, 2000, somewhere in there. They voted a team for Los Angeles, right? If you could get your st a stadium
Yeah, Lee
plan.
Steinberg was in on that, right? Yep.
Yeah. If you get a stadium done by October. Well, they couldn't. And then that's when Houston came in to the league. And that was all in the same amount of time when the Browns left and then, ended up with a team in Baltimore, right? Well, and Kroenke capitalized on that because then, for all those years, they could not get anything done in terms of a stadium because there was never going to be public money there. Just like there was no public money for the Raiders to get a stadium, there was no public money for the 49ers. You just can't get that done in California. Stan Kroenke wanted to be the savior, and that's what he ended up being. But they had a lie to get there, which is why they had to pay $790 million to St. Louis for not following the league guidelines about relocation. So, those are the things that happen and you just live with it and move on. But that's the real Stan Kroenke.
It's amazing because I was out in LA with my wife and we had a little bit of time to kill before we went to LAX. And we wound up near the Chargers facility because I went down there to get a taco and I look up and there's the Chargers in El Segundo. And they practice maybe 5 miles from the stadium. I've been to Inglewood up to no good from, I saw, the Lakers play back in the 90s there. And to see what that footprint is, and to seen it landing at the airport over the last decade, having seen a Super Bowl now there and all of that. It still doesn't feel like a thing. It still feels like the Chargers are going to wind up to me in London before it's all over with, and so are the Jaguars and a bunch of other, because there's going to be more money somewhere else and more interest. There's another arena built on that footprint. I looked up, like, there's an arena here. Who plays here? It's like the Clippers. I'm like, oh, all right. So the Clippers play here and the old Lakers play there, but the real Lakers play over there. There's just a lot of money. And again, this goes back to billionaires and toys, where our
Brilliant.
baseball owner comes in. The first thing he did here was made a bobblehead of himself.
I'm sure there's a lot of bobbleheads of Jerry Jones too, but the reason I don't think the Chargers will move, and there was a lot of rumors when it all went down 10 years ago, like you said, and that was a big reason why they could never get a stadium in San Diego. Not the only reason, but a big one was in terms of public money. But to play in that stadium, do you know what the Chargers pay in rent a year to play in that stadium?
Zero.
$1. You had to pay something. So they pay $1, and yet they share in signage and marketing and luxury suites and all that with the Rams. And so Kroenke was forced to agree to that when the whole deal went down that allowed him to move. And so there again, there it is about the money. So to move somewhere else, oh, there'd be another relocation fee, and there would be all whatever it would take in terms to get it done. So again, I'm never one to say never, but I think the Chargers like where they are, at least for the near future, and they have a sweetheart deal in terms of where they play.
Balzer is always great guest here. He gives me a chance. I'm trying to see if I have any other old logo helmets I could bring. I got Patriot Pat over there as well. I started collecting these 1971 belt buckles because I collect my rock and roll belt buckles, but this is my original childhood Colts belt buckle from Sears Roebuck 1973, 74. I have pictures of me wearing it when I'm like 5, 6 years old, and I still had it. And then I realized that they made a set for the whole league, and I've just been slowly. I need the Saints. I need the Broncos and I need the Bills. And the Bills is that old, OJ Simpson, the helmet they wore the other night. And my wife and I are having fun with some of these throwbacks. Some of them are throw-ups. I mean, I'll be honest with you. And I got Todd Radom coming on here. But the throwbacks are nice when they look real, right? When they're to the detail, it makes you look up and say, "Hey, it looks like a game from 1974," you know?
No, and that's what they love to do. And of course, they don't do this to sell uniforms, to sell jerseys, right? That's not the reason they
No,
do
not
it.
at all. Not at all.
Nothing to do
They
with
do
it.
it to tug at my heartstrings and make me want to grab old Football Digest and read the work of Howard Balzer. Tell everybody what you're doing so I can catch up with you and get you out of here and you can go back doing what you do best, which is worry about who's getting in the Hall of Fame.
There we go. And that process is ongoing. Here we are in October, and it's going to be coming up pretty darn soon. We could talk a whole hour about the whole Hall of Fame process and
We'll do
how
that. We'll do that if the Ravens are 2-7. I'll call you in a
the
couple weeks.
all right, because they changed the process, which is making it even harder to get in. But cardswire.usatoday.com. I know that the Cardinals are certainly not the definition of a national team, but I write about the Cardinals there. Doing some stuff here and there for Sirius, not as much as in the past. Of course, do Lindy's Pro Football Magazine every year. Been doing that, believe it or not, for 33 years. And some local radio and podcasts that I do just to keep in the game. So I'll keep. My wife always says, "You'll never retire, will you?" And I said, "Well, as long as I can write and talk and edit and do it reasonably well, I'm going to keep doing it."
Well, you're doing it better than reasonably well. And the next time I get out to Phoenix, I promise you, you could have been our breakfast mates in Tempe at Snooze AM. My wife and I took one of those Waymos. You get in the car and there's no driver. We did that in Phoenix. But we went out to go to the Celebrity Theater. I saw a Meatloaf tribute there with the Caleb
Awesome.
Johnson who won the American Idol. It was a little Rocky Horror, but I'm a Meatloaf guy. And Meat was
Awesome.
a friend of mine, the late great Meatloaf. But it had Celebrity Theater there right by the airport. It has a revolving stage and it's the exact replica of Painter's Mill, which was a theater that burned down here 40 years ago that I went and saw Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons when I was a kid, as well as Kicks and Crack the Sky and a few others. But it reminded me of that, and I've always wanted to go there. So I checked it off the bucket list. And honestly, how I went there, I had the greatest experience ever. They have this incredible lounge downstairs with all of this rock and roll memorabilia. It's awesome. Alice Cooper does his figgy pudding there every year. But I walked down, I looked, and I'm like, it's on the National Historic Register thing with a plaque and everything. And I'm thinking, you're a rock and roll guy. You have to see Chicago or something there, right?
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, I've been there, and I was considering going to that Meatloaf tribute. They do a bunch of those at little theaters around town. There's one coming up close to where I live in Chandler and Gilbert, and called the Hale Theater. That they just it's a small building, but they're having like a Beach Boys tribute coming up at the end of this month and into November. So the one that stands out that I remember going to Celebrity Theater, not a bad seat in the house, was Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. And that
And by
was
the way, today's his birthday too. I share his birthday. So you've mentioned a guy who I share a birthday with.
phenomenal. That was phenomenal. So yeah, they do a lot of that stuff, and so those tribute things are normally pretty good. You never know what you're going to get, but I always figure if these guys are on tour and people are booking them, they must do a pretty darn good job.
Tuesday afternoon. All right. Howard Balzer's my dude.
Cold-hearted orb that rules the night.
You know, knights in white satin. We just lost John Lodge earlier this week too. So Moody Blues. Let's hear it for them. Howard,
He was supposed to be here coming up, and he just passed. I
we
didn't
just
see.
we lost him this weekend. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You know, rock and roll. This is why I went and saw McCartney in Albuquerque last week. This is why my wife and I went and saw the Eagles at the Sphere. This is why we went and saw the Who and Joe Perry at the Hollywood Bowl. Howard, I've spent the last 6 weeks being bucket list chasey. I don't want to think anything's chasing up on me, but I just felt like it was my time, and I feel like this because I got to go see some rock stars. So, Howard, I appreciate you, man. I'll grab you again, especially if the Ravens season goes the wrong way, because we got to talk some football here. But I always love talking Hall of Fame, and I always love visiting with you, man.
My pleasure. Always enjoy it too, Nestor. Take care.
The H-Man, Howard Balzer. He's got awards up on his shelf. He's written books. He's written pieces. He's been in places, and he's a Hall of Fame voter for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So if you got any complaints about Steve Smith or whatever, Terrell Suggs, give them to him, not me. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.